You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Jeremy R. Hammond. His websites are jeremyrhammond.com and foreignpolicyjournal.com. He is the author of several books. They're listed on, you know, the A site, which I have a love-hate relationship with Amazon, which I think that I mirror a lot of other people's views on Amazon. But he does have several books, one of which we talked about earlier in the program, Obstacle to Peace, the U.S. Role in the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, and Ron Paul versus Paul Krugman, Austrian versus Keynesian Economics in the Financial Crises, Benny Morris's Untenable Denial of the Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, which is in fact happening, darn it. And a couple of other books. And we were talking about the Christian organizations in this country that see Israel as some sort of sign of the last days, or that they're supposed to do whatever they're doing, no matter how many people they slaughter. What the heck? What is wrong with these people?
That's a good question. That's actually a very important question. Let me quickly interject, though, before I answer it. If for people who don't want to shop at Amazon, you can get my books at obstacletopeace.com. Obviously, that's the website, the official website of my book, the one we just discussed. But all my books are available there. So if you want to cut out the middleman, and I also have, you know, exclusively signed copies are available from obstacletopeace.com. So, in terms of Christian Zionism, it's a huge, kind of elephant in the room, really. I personally feel that there's a lot of focus, a lot of, you know, Palestinian, peace activists, activists who support Palestinians' rights, I should say, who focus on the Israel lobby, organizations like AIPAC, and the influence in Congress and in the government. And I certainly would not argue that there isn't, you know, such an influence. It is, it's huge. It's an impact, but I think the focus on that really distracts from the even bigger influence, which is Christian Zionism. And I just put it this way, you know, it doesn't require AIPAC money for congresspersons to vote the way they do on votes related to the Israel-Palestine conflict when that they are themselves ideologically Zionists. and the Christian Zionism is just so, it's just such a, you know, it's woven into the fabric of the country. So it doesn't require this, like, kind of like, you know, the way it's characterized is that, you know, you have this external power, like, influencing the U.S. government, but it's not so much that as much as it is, you know, the Christian Zionist influence and culture within America itself, that is just so pervasive. Obviously, especially among, like, very evangelical Christians who believe that, you know, the establishment of Israel in 1948 was a fulfillment of prophecy, that, you know, there's a strong belief that, you know, Christians must support Jews no matter what, because, you know, they're God's chosen people. And, you know, these kind of very, you know, religious views that kind of just disregard the facts on the ground. And what the real situation is, it's kind of like it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know, you asked the question earlier, how can people, you know, tolerate or support, you know, murder of children and this violence and this aggression? And, you know, it's almost like that doesn't matter to a lot of people. It's, they have this belief that, you know, Israel is a fulfillment of prophecy and the U.S. should stand by Israel, and that's that. And their understanding of the situation doesn't go beyond that. But, you know, there are also, you know, obviously there are so many Christians who do recognize what's going on, who do support Palestinians' rights, who do oppose the violence. You know, obviously Palestinian terrorism as well as Israeli violence, you know, impose the violence on both sides. And, you know, who recognize that what Israel is doing is wrong. It's illegal. It's criminal. It's sinful. And, you know, so I think, again, the one of the big problems is, you know, there's always going to be a certain number of people that you just, the facts just won't matter. And you're just never going to reach them. But I believe more, and I believe this very strongly. In fact, I wouldn't have written Obstacle to Peace if I didn't believe this very strongly, that I believe that most people, if they actually understood what was really happening, wouldn't feel that way. They wouldn't feel like, well, the U.S. policy is appropriate. You know, the U.S. policy of supporting Israel's crimes against the Palestinians. They wouldn't feel that that's appropriate if they understood it in those terms. If
right.
They understood that that's exactly what's happening, that is, you know, the U.S. is supporting crimes. And so they just don't understand because, again, they're just inundated with a false narrative by the government and the media.
Well, it's one thing to be lied to by the government and the media. It's quite another thing for so-called religious people to lie to their parishioners. And after my return from Israel in 1999, I began to take a very serious look at the church that I belong to. And that was the beginning of my disbelief and the beginning of my leaving, formally leaving that church, because, and you don't have to make the trip to Israel to come to a conclusion that, yes, your religious leaders do lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was also raised Christian. I mean, my parents, I went to church growing up. I'm not religious now, but, you know, I was raised Christian. So I was really kind of brought up in that environment, you know, like people who held that view that, you know, the U.S. should support Israel no matter what. And I just remember growing up hearing that a lot. And that's actually probably one of the reasons I, you know, I'm interested in this issue is, you know, that background of mine. And just always, you know, reading about Israel in the Bible and you know, that whole aspect of it. And so, yeah, it just, again, this just to stress the point that I was making earlier, you know, that influence, I think, is much more powerful and much stronger than, you know, the Israel lobby.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. And it's not, again, it's not to discount that influence. It's just, I feel by over-exaggerating that influence, it takes attention away. I mean, the issue of Christian Zionism virtually never gets any focus and attention. And I think that's a mistake because I think that is the more powerful influence.
Oh, absolutely. Because people do not expect that their religious leaders are nothing but a bunch of liars. Well, yeah. That they're lying to them because you just expect better of them. And,
yeah,
and
sure. Certain religious leaders just take up the Zionist propaganda and then that they proclaim that to their followers as though that was truth. So yeah, they're lying, and yeah, I agree with that.
Right. So, anyway, I'm not. What am I? I'm I'm not a follower of a 501c3 corporation anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How did you get involved? Did you want to go on to talk about the vaccine issue?
Certainly. How did I get involved in that? Well,
yes.
I'd always kind of paid a little bit of attention to that issue just out of curiosity. You know, I just in my childhood, I remember always wondering, like, it didn't make sense to me. Like, I was told that, you know, the way a vaccine works is they take like a part of the viral or bacterial antigen and, you know, they put it in the vaccine and then, you know, they weaken it so that it doesn't actually cause, you know, your symptoms, and then they inject it into you, and it does cause your immune system to respond and develop immunity without having to go through the symptoms. And I just always thought, like, well, then how is that different from just getting the natural disease and developing immunity to it? I always wondered that. I never,
Right. When I was a child,
I had a child's understanding of how it worked. Right. And so I always had that question. And, so I've always just been curious about the issue. And
sure, if you got,
I never really researched it.
They had chicken pox parties.
Right.
Because
right.
You wanted to give your child, let's get this over with. You're going to get it. Let's go ahead and get it over with. It wasn't any big deal. Chicken pox is not lethal. Yeah. Mumps aren't lethal. All of these so-called diseases that people are being vaccinated for are not lethal.
Well, let's be fair. They can be lethal, but it's very rare. I mean, the mortality rate for these diseases, I mean, it's a rite of passage. For me, it was a rite of passage just to get chickenpox. I mean, I had chickenpox. I didn't have measles because, you know, obviously the situation changed, but I was born in 77 and, you know, so measles wasn't really around and I was vaccinated. So, you know, but the thing is that, you know, today we have this childhood schedule where by the time kids are 18 years old, they could have had 70 or more doses of, I think it's 19 different vaccines. And so we're talking about a whole different thing from like the vaccines that I got, you know, when I was a child. And so anyway, so back to the question you were asking about how I kind of get into it. So around, well, in 2012, my son was born. And so leading up to that time and you know, my wife was pregnant and I began researching this issue for that reason. You know, we were about to become parents and I wanted to be able to make an informed choice. So I began very, very, you know, in a very focused and intent way, researching this issue and primarily by going into the medical literature and just investigating and seeing things for myself, you know, doing things like reading the package inserts that come with the vaccines, you know, that doctors are supposed to read those warnings to their patients and they don't. You know, starting with that and then going to and there's a great resource I want to mention to your listeners, pubmed.gov, pubmed.gov, government run website run by the National Institutes of Health, where you can search the medical literature and just find out what the science actually has to say. And so that's the point I want to stress here, is that what the government and media say that science says about vaccines and what science actually tells us about vaccines are two completely different and incompatible things. And that was my discovery. And the more I researched, the more I realized just how frightening that disparity is today. And it's not just an issue where our health is being threatened, but, you know, our liberty is also under assault. And specifically, our right to informed consent is under assault. And we see that in California as the best example of that.
Right. Absolutely. There are certain laws that you cannot send your child to school without them being fully vaccinated. You cannot send them to daycare centers.
Right. And what they've done in California is to eliminate, for, you know, anyone who doesn't know, to eliminate non-medical exemptions,
right,
to vaccines to enter school, and this happened in the wake of the 2015 Disney measles outbreak, which we can talk about. But the point for now is that they passed that law to eliminate non-medical exemptions. But we need to understand what that means, so that parents now can only get a medical exemption, which might sound reasonable. Until you recognize that, like Richard Pan, who had, you know, he was the
terrible person. You should be ashamed of himself.
You know, he was the guy who basically headed up that fight to pass this law. If you listen to his view of the role of a doctor, he believes, and he said this. He read an article in the medical literature, and he said this, that the doctor, when writing an exemption, is exercising an administrative function for the state. In other words, government bureaucrats are deciding what should happen with their children, what vaccines they're going to get, when they're going to get them. And it isn't up to the doctor. And the doctor has very little leeway to be able to write an exemption, because they're very limited. You know, instead of the doctor and the parents, who are the only, you know, parties who have the individualized knowledge necessary to be able to make a choice for an individual child, instead bureaucrats, you know, in the state government or in Washington are dictating, you know, what does and does not count as a medical exemption. And it's very, very narrow definitions. You know, for example, like if you had a prior you know, allergic reaction to a vaccine, okay, you can get an exemption. Like, so if you almost died from it, yeah, they won't make you do it again. But, you know, it's like that. And what's not happening is there's not recognition of the fact that there are children who are, number one, not everyone is at the same risk of the disease, right? Number two, not everyone is at the same risk of a vaccine injury or being harmed by the vaccine. Public policy is a one-size-fits-all policy that really plays Russian roulette with our children. It doesn't recognize. I mean, the CDC does not take into consideration what we now understand as science has you know, advanced, that there are certain children who are genetically predisposed to be at higher risk of vaccine injury. And so this is a big thing that the mainstream media don't talk about this. You know, the New York Times had an editorial a week ago today, attacking, what the media derogatorily call anti-vaxxers, which pretty
right.
much anyone who dares question vaccine policy. Yeah. It's just, you're ignorant. You don't know science and, you're just making an irrational decision. If you don't strictly follow the CDC's schedule exactly as the CDC prescribes it, then you're an anti-vaxxer.
Well, the CDC admits on its website that out of the last 20 years that the flu vaccine has not been effective at all. And some of these, like the bird flu, that was a crisis that was developed in Mexico that wasn't even an actual disease. It was a government crisis that everybody was supposed to get these flu vaccines. And in fact, George H.W. Bush said, when he was asked if he was going to get the flu vaccine, he said, heck no, I'm not going to get that vaccine.
Don't remember that. Well, there was actually a bird flu, but the risk from it, it was so hyped up. I mean, every time one of these new influenza vaccine subtypes
or all this stuff.
Yeah, the swine flu, the bird flu.
Zika virus.
They always use it to push public policy and to urge everyone to get out and to get vaccinated. There's actually a study done by a guy named Peter Doshi who looked at the question of, we're always being warned about these horrible flu pandemics. And he just looked at the pandemics, and with the exception of, it was 1918, I think, that there was a major flu pandemic that was quite deadly.
Oh, well, that was something that also had to do with the war, because there was Schmedley Butler was a general in that war, and a lot of the people that died of the flu, it was actually because of the circumstances of the war and where they were located. And what he did with his men is that he cleaned up the area where they were located, gave them better rations, and treated them like they were actually officers instead of enlisted men. And they escaped the so-called death by flu. And so you have to look at the circumstances under which people are dying. I haven't read anything about it recently, but there are books written specifically about that flu. And, of course, even if you look at the smallpox vaccine, that was when they used the smallpox vaccine in the Philippines. The Filipinos were a virgin civilization. They had never experienced smallpox at all until they got the vaccine. And then there was three epidemics that killed thousands and thousands of people.
Go ahead.
And what they did was the U.S. government had created a lot of vaccine, and they couldn't use it, and it was shelf worn, it was out of date, it was no good. So they just thought they would use it on the guinea pig Filipinos. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
We're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Jeremy R. Hammond. His websites are jeremyrhammond.com, foreignpolicyjournal.com, and obstacletopeace.com. Buy your books there instead of at the A place. So I'm glad you told me that. I'm sorry I didn't realize that before. But yes. So the CDC admits things, but who's going to look at the CDC if their white-coated doctor tells them that they need to have a vaccine? There's a commercial on TV that shows an individual in her kitchen, and she's talking, just talking, and then she goes into the room, and she's got this white coat on, and all of a sudden, she takes on this air of authority. And she looks more believable and seems to radiate authority so that now you believe her when she says, this vitamin is the best one for you, or whatever the heck she was promoting. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, I definitely find it to be the case that the CDC says one thing in its public relations messaging and admits other things.
Right,
you know, in terms of, like, for example, CDC researchers and what they're publishing in the medical literature, things like that. And I'll give you an example of that, but I'll kind of segue into that, actually, if I'll just might jump back a moment to what I was saying about the researcher Peter Doshi and the pandemics. So he actually looked at that question, and he showed that actually with that one exception of 1918, the flu pandemics that have occurred have actually been less severe than the usual influenza, you know, the usual seasonal flu. And there are actually studies showing that, in fact, annual flu, getting an annual flu shot can actually increase your risk of illness. Not right. only your risk of the flu, but also risk of other illnesses. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So there was a study in Canada that looked at a series of studies that were done in Canada, finding that receipt of the I think it was the H1N1 flu vaccine in 2009, was associated actually with an increased risk. And then other studies have looked at that. And there's a reason for this. And there's the biological mechanism for that is actually, you know, elucidated in the medical literature. And it has to do with what I like to call the opportunity costs of vaccines, which is that, you know, when you get vaccinated, you're developing, you know, a kind of a vaccine conferred immunity, but it's not, contrary to what the CDC says, it's not the same as natural immunity. And it's not nearly as good. I mean, let's face it, natural immunity is just superior. And so what the vaccine is designed to do is to stimulate an antibody response. This is the immunity that you gain from the vaccine, but what people don't really understand is that that's not the only part of the immune system. That's not the only kind of immunity. And there's also another branch of the immune system called, you know, which is called cell mediated immunity. And while the vaccine kind of skews the immune system to have this kind of antibody response, by vaccinating, you're denying the opportunity to be naturally infected with that influenza virus and develop natural immunity, which would include not only a strong antibody response, but also a strong, robust cell-mediated immunity that would protect you against not only that infecting strain, but also other strains of influenza, which is a benefit the vaccine does not confer, and even other viruses altogether. There's one study that was done. It was a randomized controlled study, which is a bit of an unusual because usually they do retrospective observational studies. This one was a randomized controlled study that found no evidence that the influenza vaccine was actually effective. It didn't prevent the outcome, even though it did stimulate an antibody response, and they equate that with immunity. I mean, that's how the FDA passes vaccines, you know, vaccines gain licensure. If they can demonstrate an antibody response, they equate that with immunity. That's not the case. That's scientifically invalid because, again, an antibody response is not the only kind of immunity. And so vaccines tend to skew the immune system toward this Th2 antibody humoral immunity at the expense of lost cell-mediated immunity, which, you know, provides much more protection. And this is the explanation for why people who got vaccinated were actually at higher risk of that 2009 influenza virus that was circulating that year. And, you know, coming back to segue into that point about the CDC and, you know, how its public messages are completely different from, you know, what the science says. And a great example of that is the CDC's recommendation that all pregnant women get a flu shot during any trimester. Well, if you go into the FDA's website, just Google FDA vaccine package inserts. Just Google that, right, and the page will come up, and you can go and look at the vaccine package inserts, which are legally required. The manufacturers are legally required to have those in the vaccine packages. And you can go right in there and look at the vaccine package inserts where it says, the manufacturers say, studies to determine the safety for pregnant women have not been done.
Right.
You know?
What's a little mercury, right?
But here's the CDC telling women it's safe, don't worry about it. And I'll continue on that point when we come back.
Okay, we'll be right back. 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to libertystickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's libertystickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Jeremy R. Hammond. His websites are jeremyrhammond.com, foreignpolicyjournal.com, and obstacletopeace.com. But we're talking about vaccines, which he is also very educated on, and is offering us some additional information that we need to know. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah, so if I might come back to that point about the CDC and this, the disparity between its public messaging and what the science is telling us. Again, the CDC. So as I was discussing before the break, there, the CDC recommends pregnant women get an annual flu shot, even though the manufacturer's own package inserts state right in there that the studies to determine the safety of doing that haven't been done and warns against that practice. And yet the other thing that's just really astonishing about the CDC's recommendation is it doesn't specify, it doesn't tell pregnant women that if they're going to get a flu shot, to get the mercury-free version. I'm sorry, is there a
I was coughing.
Connection issue?
Yeah, I'm muted.
Okay. May I continue?
Yeah, please.
Okay, sorry. So the CDC does not recommend pregnant women to get the version of the vaccine that doesn't have mercury in it, which is just really reckless and irresponsible, because there's no reason, you know, if a woman is to get the flu shot, there's no reason to expose the fetus to the potential neurotoxicity of mercury. It's completely unnecessary. There's no reason for the CDC to recommend that vaccine to pregnant women when they could just say, specify, get the one without mercury. So, and for people who don't know what I'm talking about, so there's two versions of the vaccine. One is a single dose vial of the vaccine, which is just obviously for a single dose given to individuals. And then there's a multi-dose vials, which, you know, if you go to Walmart or to some of these places like this, they're more likely to be using the multi-dose vials. And because they're, you know, there's multiple doses being taken out of that vial, it has to have a preservative in it. By law, the FDA requires the manufacturers to use a preservative, and the preservative that they use is called thimerosal, which is about 50% ethyl mercury by weight. So ethyl mercury is a form of mercury, and it's neurotoxic. It's a known neurotoxin. And to expose, you know, a developing fetus to a known neurotoxin unnecessarily is really just, in my mind, is criminally irresponsible. But, you know, that's the CDC's recommendation. And the CDC does say, I mean, it does. If you dig deep enough on their website, you know, in their pages talking about how pregnant women should get a flu shot, and one of them, they does say, well, you know, there is one. It does inform that there is a mercury-free version available. But it's very clear in saying that it doesn't recommend one over the other. Well, why not? Why would the CDC not recommend the one that doesn't have mercury in it over the one that does? I mean, that makes no sense. But the explanation for why that is because the CDC has really staked itself on the position that the mercury is harmless. And the reason for that is because in the late 90s, it was discovered that as the CDC was adding more and more vaccines to the, you know, routine childhood vaccine schedule, nobody in the government was actually doing the calculations to determine what the exposure levels would be, the cumulative exposure levels of children from the mercury. And when the FDA finally did get around to doing those calculations, I believe that was in 1998, if I'm not mistaken, when they finally did get around to doing those calculations, they determined that the cumulative levels of mercury children were being exposed to was greater than the government's own safety guidelines. And so, you know, that was a big scandal, which, you know, leads into the whole autism question. But after that, thimerosal was removed. Because of that, the decision was made to remove thimerosal from most childhood vaccines, but it is still contained in multi-dose influenza vaccine. So don't let anyone tell you, listeners might have heard this, that, you know, well, they removed mercury from all the vaccines. That's not true. It's still in the flu shots. Which are given to pregnant women and infants as young as 6 months. The CDC recommends the influenza vaccine for infants as young as 6 months.
Is that sick or what?
It is sick, especially what science says about the safety of doing that. I've been focusing on the flu shot very intently with my writing in the past year, and actually doing a series right now, a multi-part expose on the influenza vaccine. And the first part of that series starts out just looking at a New York Times article, and the New York Times article talking about the flu shot and how effective and, you know, and safe it is. And they cite a 2010 study to support the claim that the influenza vaccine confers a great public health benefit. And, you know, interestingly enough, conveniently, they provide a link to that study in that article. And anyone who wants to click that link and read that study, can find out what that study actually had to say. It was a study by the, you know, prestigious international organization known as the Cochrane Collaboration, which is an independent scientific organization that specializes in a type of study called a meta-analysis, in which they just basically, you know, do a search of the medical literature and like all the available studies that are out there, and they kind of compile them together and they look at the whole body of evidence and make determinations about what the evidence is telling us. And they actually concluded that the CDC's fundamental assumptions underlying its flu shot recommendation are unsupported by scientific evidence. And they went so far in their criticism of the CDC as to accuse the CDC of deliberately misrepresenting the science to support its policy. And this is the study that the New York Times is citing to support its claim that science shows us that the vaccine confers a great public health benefit. That's the level of deception I'm talking about when I say that what the mainstream media is doing is manufacturing consent for public vaccine policy.
Well, I think all the ABC agencies work for corporate America, and it's really just about money. Because if you listen to hear me talk, you'd think I watch TV all day. But to listen to a Walgreens commercial, and they tell you how many flu vaccines they themselves, that company themselves, have given out, not given, have injected into people. It's something like 60 million times what? Somebody's paying for that, whether it's somebody's insurance or whatever. And when you're talking about freedom, when you talk about the fact in California that children have to have these vaccines, you're talking about parents having to pay money to get something that they don't want to have that might be dangerous, but somebody's going to make some money on it, so it's okay. And then the Federal Health and Human Services Commission, Health and Human Services, is connected to each of the state's health and human services, and the federal government is one of the biggest consumers of vaccines. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So you really have to question the whole operation.
It's not only that parents are being forced to consume a product that they don't necessarily want, but they're also paying to finance, let me put it this way, to pay for vaccine injuries. Because a lot of, another thing the mainstream media never talk about, they never address the real issues. And they have this caricature of what an anti-vaxxer is. It's just completely, devoid of, it's not reality. So people are being told by the mainstream media the fact that the government has actually granted legal immunity to vaccine manufacturers. And not only that, but there's a program called the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, VICP, which is effectively shifts the financial burden for vaccine injuries away from the manufacturers and onto the taxpaying consumers, because it's funded by an excise tax on each dose of vaccine given. So that is the taxpaying consumers who are financing, this compensation program for vaccine injuries. While the manufacturers are not even legally liable for those injuries. So what you described is correct, but it's much worse than that.
Right. I want to circle back to, I mentioned, and you mentioned it, about the influenza during World War I. And in one of my books, I state, toward the end of the war, technicians gathered up all the vaccines on the lab shelves and vaccinated every single U.S. soldier. The first time in history that a government has mandated compulsory inoculations in the military. This poisonous medical assault, the Stick diphtheria vaccine, outlawed years before in Austria due to the deaths of several children, killed more American soldiers than the war.
What is that taken from?
One of my books.
Is that the Smedley Butler book?
No, it's taken from, it's taken from Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences, which is mainly about health issues. It's people misconstrue what it's about because they're ignorant, if I can say that word. But I talk a lot about health issues. And it was the vaccines that caused the deaths.
That reminds me of, the anthrax vaccine and during the first Gulf War.
Right.
The soldiers were forcibly, they didn't have a choice. They had to have that vaccine. And that has been associated, you know, and it's in the medical literature that that is associated with Gulf War syndrome, you know, and among other things. I mean, there's numerous possibilities, you know, factors and variables in that in terms of causality, you know, including the depleted uranium munitions and, you know, chemical exposures. But the vaccine was one of them. And, you know, so that has been highlighted as is one of the potential causal factors of Gulf War syndrome.
Right.
Yeah. So this idea of mandatory vaccinations, this is a really serious threat.
It is.
And people are just not awakened to the seriousness of this threat. And the assault that's taking place on our rights right now, and our right to informed consent. And so that's really, I mean, that's really why I've shifted my focus away from other things that, you know, I'm obviously passionate about the Israel-Palestine conflict, but I've really, in the last year, I've really focused almost all of my writing on the vaccine issue, precisely because of this. You know, it's one thing for me to, you know, to have a concern about, you know, people living in other countries and things, but, you know, I'm a father. And
right.
I live here, and I kind of need to be focused on right now on this threat until at least to this, you know, maybe until I feel comfortable about it, because really it's scary to me what's happening. You see what's happening in California, and you know, maybe we should bring that up. You know, the pretext for that was that 2015, you know, measles outbreak.
Right.
Which of course, we're all told, you know, the media just constantly, every time they talk about measles, they bring up the 2015 outbreak and how, you know, it's the fault of unvaccinated, you know, parents who are choosing not to vaccinate their kids. Interestingly, I went to the California Health Department's, you know, website at the time and looked up their data. And the majority, I think it was 64%, were adults. Most of the cases were in adults, not children. They weren't unvaccinated kids primarily who were getting measles. It was adults. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we're talking about a generation of people who, you know, were born they were vaccinated before the whole 1998, you know, Andrew Wakefield thing that we're told was the
right.
That was the start of the whole anti-vaxxer movement. And you know, we're talking about people who were born in an era when, you know, that vaccination rates were very, very high, up in the top 90th percentile. You know, these are people who are predominantly were vaccinated and they're getting measles. Again, adults, 64% were adults in California, not unvaccinated kids.
Right.
So what does that indicate? And that's what that's the elephant in the room that they don't want to talk about. You know, that they don't want to talk about the fact. It's totally uncontroversial in the medical literature that the, you know, vaccine immunity wanes over time. They don't want to talk about that. That it fails, that it's not as robust as natural immunity, which is considered lifelong. And another problem isn't just that it's not as, you know, you don't get as robust immunity and as long-lasting immunity with the vaccine as you do from natural infection, but also, you know, the fact that measles, the vaccine has interrupted transmission of the virus. That is true. It does work. I mean, it is effective in that sense, but is that necessarily a good thing? Because then what happens is that people no longer in their adulthood, they're not getting that routine re-exposure, that routine natural boosting of immunity, so that later in life, they're protected all through right. their entire adulthood, through their elderly years. They're protected. Because the virus is circulating. That's exactly right. What creates herd immunity.
Right.
And so we've lost this natural herd immunity because of mass vaccination. And another example of that, you know, there's opportunity costs of vaccination that have to be considered that public health officials don't consider. Like, and there's population level effects, like the fact that today women, mothers, aren't as able to confer immunity to their infants through the breast milk, because, you know, immune mothers pass antibodies through the breast milk to their infants, which protects infants. I mean, in the pre-vaccine era, that's what protected infants from measles, you know, it's, you know, up to, you know, 6 months and under, especially, really, you know, require that immunity, because their own immune systems aren't developed yet. their systems are still developing. And so they require that maternal immunity, that maternal protection. Mass vaccination has destroyed that, because now, you know, women who have been vaccinated and are losing their immunity, and they don't have that strong, robust, you know, herd immunity that we could have created in this country, had it not been for the, you know, measles vaccine coming around. And so they're not as able. And so now infants are, in the event of an outbreak, infants are actually at greater risk today than they were in the pre-vaccine era, precisely for that reason, because mothers aren't as able to protect them with maternal antibodies.
Right. And they also, there's more C-sections, and so they don't, they also, by going through the birth canal naturally, it has beneficial, it's like trying to help a butterfly out. The butterfly needs to struggle and gain strength by getting out of the cocoon itself. And it's the same way with women giving birth. The child, the infant, needs to be born naturally, or should be born naturally, because it's just more beneficial. We will be right back in 3 minutes.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest is Jeremy R. Hammond. His websites are jeremyrhammond.com, foreignpolicyjournal.com, and obstacletopeace.com. And you need to have one on your vaccine information, a regular website, right?
I currently just host all of my stuff right on jeremyrhaman.com.
But okay.
If you go to the navigation menu, I kind of categorize my blogs either by foreign.
Okay.
There's three categories, basically: foreign policy, health and vaccines, and then liberty. Okay. And economics.
Okay. Speaking of economics, you mentioned previously about how many vaccines are given, usually in one shot. And if you didn't mention it, then it's a good time to mention it. The patient or the patient's parents pay 75 cents per vaccine to go towards a fund that if their child suffers, that they can use that money, that the money is used to pay damages through the vaccine court. What is referred to as the vaccine court. And you have to have all this evidence when you approach a court. But the vaccine manufacturers are never held accountable, either financially or in any other way, for the damage that their vaccines are doing. It's
correct.
The people themselves.
Yeah, and another point, I'm glad you came back to that, because another point I should have made is that how that removes, it eliminates the incentive for vaccine manufacturers to invest in developing more effective ways of combating communicable diseases. So you've eliminated that market incentive, the fact that if they were liable for vaccine injuries, they'd want to try to improve their products. And so the Congress has just eliminated that incentive. It's 75 cents, just to clarify, not 75 cents per vaccine necessarily, but per vaccine dose. So there are some of the vaccines are combination vaccines. So MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. So that's three vaccine doses.
Mm-hmm.
The other combination vaccine is the DTaP, DTaP, which mm-hmm. is the diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis vaccine. $225 per dose there.
Right.
And that's how that's funded. So correct, yeah. But then you were talking about the butterfly coming out before the break, It just kind of struck me of how that kind of is a nice illustration of what I mean in terms of the opportunity costs of vaccines and how, going through a childhood infection can really, be a good thing. It can be a benefit because your immune system, that's how your immune system learns to function. It's training, literally training the immune system in what to do. And so there are some of the opportunity costs of vaccination include things like, measles has been associated with a reduced risk of more serious diseases later in life, such as, including Parkinson's disease and cancer. And so the question arises, are we trading typically, at least in industrialized advanced countries with a high standard of living, measles is a benign disease. Yes, it can ravage countries where, there's widespread malnutrition, vitamin A deficiency and things like that. But in the U.S., for example, by the time the vaccine was introduced, the mortality rate had already plummeted, so that only about 450 people a year died from measles. And so are we trading, a benign childhood illness for much more serious diseases later in life? This is a serious question that hasn't really been scientifically investigated to the extent that it needs to be for us to be confident, about what vaccines are doing.
Right.
Chickenpox is another great, great example.
Jeremy, could you stay over for a bit into the third hour?
Sure. Yeah, I can give you a little more time.
Okay, thank you. We'll be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.